from WNYC New York Public Radio. This is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show. This is just one segment of the program. You can hear all Leonard's interviews on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
In the early 1900s, naturalists didn't just observe birds. They killed them and collected them. Even the most dedicated bird lovers paid little attention to the depletion of some species until it was too late and they had become extinct. The magnificent ivory-billed woodpecker is a species long believed to have been driven to extinction. The last accepted sighting of one was some 60 years ago, but this past April, researchers announced they had discovered a living ivory-billed woodpecker in an Arkansas bayou. Tim Gallagher was one of the lucky ones to have seen the bird, and he writes about it in his latest book called The Grail Bird, published by Houghton Mifflin. I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Gallagher to my show today. Hello.
Hello. Hi, Leonard. Glad to be here.
So is spotting an ivory-billed woodpecker really the holy grail of bird watching?
Well, it has been for over half a century. It's amazing, really, because although people have claimed to have seen them over the years, it's mostly been hunters and people like that who go way back out in the swamp, but people haven't accepted the sightings. They've treated them like Bigfoot sightings. And that's where I tried to do something different. I thought, well, I'll interview all these people, and if any of them seem credible, I'll follow up on them and see if I find anything.
And you said that seeing the bird changed your life for the better, I hope.
Yeah. Oh, well, yes. It's changed it in many ways. But I'll just never forget that moment when the bird just flew across the bayou in front of Bobby Harrison and I at close range. And, I first looked for this bird in the 1970s, and Bobby had been looking for it even longer. And we just about fell out of our canoe. I mean, it was like getting a bucket of cold water thrown in your face. And we immediately paddled over to the side and jumped out of the canoe, and we were suddenly knee deep in mud and mire and climbing over fallen logs. Finally, after about 15 or 20 minutes of that, when we were totally exhausted, we sat down on a log, and Bobby just hung his head down and said, "I saw an ivory bill," and he started crying.
And you knew it was an ivory bill? Doesn't it look something like the pileated woodpecker?
Well, I can tell you now, having seen hundreds and hundreds of pileateds in one ivory bill, that it's a lot different. It's much more beautiful. I mean, it's blacker, ebony black feathers, and extensive white on the back and the trailing edge of the wings, the lower back, and the way it flies, it's larger, it's more graceful. It's a different animal.
And you'd never seen anything like it before?
Never, never.
Why did you and your colleagues wait a year to announce your findings?
Well, for one thing, as I said, this has been treated like Bigfoot sightings. Even there have been a couple of scientists in the past 30 to 40 years who've said they'd seen one or they believed they existed, and they were laughed at by their colleagues. So we wanted to get some proof. I mean, when we came out of the swamp and I went back to Cornell, I was really worried. I spent a few more days paddling through the bayou, camping out, and hoping to get a picture, and we didn't get another sighting then. And I had to go back and tell John Fitzpatrick, the director of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, about this. And he's a very serious scientist. He's discovered several species of birds unknown to science in South America in the past. And I couldn't even sleep the night before. I got into the airport late and got home. I was hovering around his office the next day at 8 o'clock, and he told me later that he was afraid I was going to tell him I only had 6 months to live because I looked so terrible.
But I guess you, as you said, you had the example of a lot of other people who had said that they had spotted one of these woodpeckers and had been made fun of.
Right. And I didn't know what would happen. I didn't know what effect it would have on my career. I mean, I've been at the Lab of Ornithology for 15 years. I edit the magazine Living Bird, and I didn't know what would happen. I was very worried about it. And so,
well, you're respected. It isn't like you're some,
right.
I might come out of the bayou and say, I saw that bird, and people would say, well, who the heck is he? But
right.
Wouldn't they have just assumed that you weren't lying about that sort
well,
of thing?
Well, I'll tell you. There was an ornithologist, John Dennis, who found an ivory-billed nest in Cuba in 1948 and took the last universally accepted photographs of this species, a pair of them. And so in 1966, he said he spotted some ivory bills in East Texas, and he was laughed at, even though he obviously knew what an ivory bill looked like. And so,
well, what would have been needed to convince everybody?
He needed to get a photograph of those birds.
And you did too, didn't you?
Right, exactly.
Nest even, or just something.
And
that
we had hoped
different.
We didn't want to get the media attention and the attention of bird watchers too early either, and have them running down there and getting in the way of our research. And we really wanted a chance to try to get better documentation. In fact, it took about 5 weeks before anyone even saw the bird again after me. And then there were several sightings that April. And finally, David Leneau took a video. But it wasn't the best quality video, and we were hoping to do better than that.
Is there any way to know whether the people who've seen that bird are seeing the same bird or different birds?
Well, we're being conservative and just saying that at least one bird was there. But actually, the bird that Bobby Harrison and I saw, we believe it was a female because we didn't notice red on the head. And some of the other people saw red on the heads of the birds they saw, which would mean it was a male. But just because we didn't see it doesn't mean the red wasn't there. But I believe that it was a female.
Had you always suspected that some of these birds were still alive?
I did. I believed it. The big thing was, you know, in about the 1950s, by then, between the Civil War and the 1950s, the South was pretty well clear-cut, these bottomland forests. So if this bird would have had to just, these birds, if they just managed to hang on, if there were enough little nooks where they could nest, you know, since then, the forests have been getting much better. And the hope was if they made it past that bottleneck, then there was hope that they'd continue to increase. And that was what I hoped, and that's what I believed. And I think the fact that we've seen at least one bird, I mean, this bird had to have been born at least in the 1990s, if not in this century. So it had parents. And that's pretty exciting to think that these birds were breeding more than half a century after science had written them off.
John James Audubon wrote about this woodpecker. Did he observe many of them personally?
He did, yeah. In fact, he collected some of them with a shotgun.
Yeah, they did it in those days. But also, it was a time when there was a lot of logging, and that changed everything.
Right. Well, especially after the Civil War. At the end of the Civil War, there was still a lot of virgin timber, virgin swamp forests across the South, and these were beautiful forests. Even in 1906, when Teddy Roosevelt went bear hunting in Louisiana, he raved about the trees there. He said, there's nothing like this in the entire East. To see trees like these cypresses, you'd have to go all the way to the giant redwoods. And yet, you know, when we were saving Yosemite and Yellowstone and all that, no one thought about the South. They just continued cutting millions of board feet of timber a year until it was virtually gone.
So is this a place that has come back, or was this one of the few areas that was spared?
Well, small parts of it were spared, but it's largely come back in the last, you know, 100 years.
And then you say you saw a description of the woodpecker by a kayaker on the internet and decided to go in there and search for yourself. A pretty uncomfortable search, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, it was. I mean, when we it was Gene Sparling. He'd put this report on a canoe club website, and we decided to go with him. And this was less than 2 weeks after he saw the bird, so this was the freshest sighting we'd ever gone out on. But when we went down there and launched our canoe following this guy who we didn't know from Adam, I mean, it was like a scene from Deliverance or something.
Well, you had poisonous snakes.
Yeah, poisonous snakes and cypress knees sticking up out of the water that you crash into. And, you know, we almost got swamped a few times.
And even the limited menu when you went to the local cafe.
Right, right. Well, of course.
You ate alligator, or was there anything else
available? Oh, right. That was actually in Louisiana when I was looking down the Atchafalaya Swamp. Yeah, I went into a little shack, and all they had was alligator. And that was good, though. Didn't taste like chicken, though.
No, it tastes like alligator, which right. Is eaten a lot down there. Are they endangered yet?
Well, they were. They're actually doing better now than they were 20 or 30 years ago.
Now, the idea of killing an endangered bird to put into a collection seems foreign to us today. But you've called the early birders bird whackers instead of bird watchers. It was important to them to kill the bird, to stuff it, and then to keep it in their collection?
Well, what was sad about it was as these birds became more and more rare, and as we were also simultaneously destroying their habitat, some of the real hardcore collectors were saying, well, if you want to get one of these birds, you better get it now. And so they actually went out, and it wasn't like someone hunting for food and just randomly shooting the next bird that came along. They knew where these birds lived, and they targeted them.
Including Frank Chapman, the famous director of the American Museum of Natural History, who killed some critically rare Carolina parakeets before he founded the National Audubon Society.
Right, and he shot an ivoryville in 1892 in Florida. But I like to think that he was doing penance or something.
The information you've included about the early naturalists contains some pretty funny stories. Didn't John Lawson run afoul of the Tuscarora Indians while he was looking for birds?
Yeah, he was actually captured and tortured. I think.
Oh, that's not so funny.
They put flaming spikes in his skin. That was the end of him.
They also, these naturalists would plagiarize each other's work.
Mm-hmm.
Claim that they had spotted things that they hadn't really spotted?
Well, sometimes, yeah. Linnaeus actually wrote up the report for that species, and he'd never seen it, and he borrowed other, Mark Catesby's description.
When you started, did you intend to keep your search purely academic, or did you always plan to go out and search for birds like this in the southern swamps?
Well, I knew I'd eventually do that. At first, I actually was interviewing people who had definitely seen the bird, people who'd seen the birds in the 1930s in this tract of forest called the Singer Tract in Louisiana. It was the last chunk of primeval forest in the south, really, the last decent chunk of it. And there was a fight to save it in the early 1940s, but it was finally cut by a logging company, and it was the last known stronghold of these birds. But I talked to even a couple of boys who lived in a logging camp there when they were growing up, and the son of a warden who lived in a cabin out there, and they remembered the birds, and it was really fascinating.
Have there been other instances of finding living members of species that have been thought to be extinct?
Oh, yeah, this happens from time to time, but not like it's really rare in the continental United States, of course. And this is a bird.
Because there aren't that many wilderness areas.
Yeah, and there are a lot of bird watchers here. That's what people have said for years, that considering how many thousands of bird watchers there are, surely if this bird still existed, someone would have seen it by now. But what they're not taking into account is that 99% of the birders never get off the boardwalk in the swamp. So they're not out there with the cottonmouths and the alligators and things. So the people who are seeing and describing these birds are people like a turkey hunter leaning against a tree dressed from head to foot in camouflage, or someone in a deer stand. And there have been some really good descriptions. So this always gave me hope, because I thought, well, why would these people be lying?
Do you think that this discovery is an argument for having more protected parklands?
Oh, I do, definitely.
Because there's still a war going on about this.
Well, there's a danger now that, I've said how these forests are improving and getting better all the time, but there's a danger that now we'll start logging them intensively again. So I'm hoping we won't do that. I'm hoping we'll set aside enough land for these birds. And also, it's really tragic that we never saved, like, the Singer Tract to make it into a national park or something, because there's nowhere we can go to see a pristine southern forest now. And I'd like to think that in a couple of centuries, maybe my descendants will be able to see something like that.
But these birds had also been spotted, as you say, in Cuba,
right,
and in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Are the wilderness areas disappearing there as well?
Well, I mean,
I thought there were marshes in Cuba that had been untouched for a long time, and naturalists were having a field day with. The birds wouldn't have gone to that?
Well, no. They're very habitat-specific. So you've got to have, in Cuba, they were mostly an old-growth forest. So you've got to have the kind of habitat they need. I mean, finding this bird might prove that it's possible for a few birds to hang on in, altered habitats. But to have a good population, you need more good land.
Well, we have no idea whether there is a good population Has there been any discussion about trying to capture and breed the birds in captivity to preserve the species the way we have with some eagles?
Well, you know, I actually worked on the peregrine falcon recovery, and that was really great, but that bird was particularly good for, you know, it adapted well to captivity, and we knew that. Falconers had been working with these birds for centuries, and even wild-caught falcons, they adapt well to captivity. But here you're talking about a really shy, secretive bird. I suspect it'd be really dangerous for the bird if you tried to trap it, or and it probably wouldn't adapt well. It may not breed. So I don't think we'll be doing anything like that anytime soon. I imagine we've got to do it the old-fashioned way and save the bird's habitat, improve the habitat.
Well, will it change how you feel about your discovery if the ivory-billed woodpecker you spotted turns out to be the last one on Earth?
Well, that'd be very sad. I think the odds against that are astronomical that we would have stumbled upon the last one, but that'd be very sad. There are several other states even where I think we need to start checking some of these sightings more now, taking them more seriously. And I'm really hoping in the next 3 or 4 years that we'll find other pockets of them, perhaps South Carolina, Florida, maybe East Texas again, Georgia.
Is that what you've seen in the birding community? People now encouraged to go out and try to spot more ivory-billed woodpeckers?
Well, there's a lot of that talk now. It's really early in this. You know, we're just a couple of months into this, people knowing, not even that long. And people are talking about, wow, you know, and even thinking of people who told them things. And maybe I should have taken that more seriously. Maybe I should check that out.
Tim Gallagher is the editor-in-chief of Living Bird, the flagship publication of the world-famous Cornell Lab of Ornithology. His book, The Grail Bird, Hot on the Trail of the Ivory-Billed Woodpecker, is published by Houghton Mifflin. And you can see him tonight. He'll be giving a talk at the Explorers Club at 6:30. That's at 46 East 70th Street between Park and Madison Avenues. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Leonard. It was my pleasure.
Thanks for checking out today's podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.